With fall in full swing, more moments call for more comfort. Mack Weldon's got all the essentials for comfortable, easy-to-layer clothes designed for cooler days and timeless style you can count on. Their new Ace line, inspired by their best-selling sweatpants, combines everyday comfort with long-lasting and effortless looks. Not flashy, just classic, always in style, and made from the world's most comfortable performance materials. Fall into comfort with Mack Weldon's Ace collection. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MACK25.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to One Hot Fest. I'm your host, Blake Howard. This is, of course, One Hot Take, but happening surrounding the Adelaide Film Festival. The best thing about the Adelaide Film Fest, if you go, is that you get to see a whole bunch of films that are just at the tip of the spear of their release or well ahead of their cinematic release. And the worst thing is that sometimes when you go, you're the only other person that I know that has gone is me, and there's no other person that saw that movie. So what I've been doing is collecting my great friends all around the world, great film critics, great film minds to join me to help review some of these films that have been also having their festival debuts around the world. And today I have gotten the great Corey Everett to help deliver me from nowhere, or deliver me from bewilderment, deliver me from something, whatever the hell Scott Cooper's Snooze Springsteen movie was. Corey, deliver me from it. Help me.
Hey, Blake, how you doing? Happy to be here. I did see Deliver Me From Nowhere at the New York Film Festival, which we were just talking about on mic. Was really happy to go back there again. It's a festival I went to every year when I lived in New York, and since I've been out in LA, I've been lucky enough to kind of go back and do our cinephile trivia events during the festival and check out some movies while I'm there. Saw some really good stuff, and then I saw some stuff that I was more mixed on, and I would say that's where I land on Deliver Me From Nowhere. I'll throw it back to you just with the question of, where are you as a Springsteen fan? Are you a Springsteen fan?
No, let's listen to this trailer. Then we'll come back and we'll talk both Springsteen and particularly Scott Cooper, the writer director of Deliver Me From Nowhere.
It's a hard thing, realizing people aren't who you want them to be. It feels different coming home. There's a real emptiness.
I think Bruce is afraid of what's coming. And he feels guilty leaving behind the world he knows.
It's like I'm always running away from something. Like the past is breathing down my neck.
I don't have to tell you, we got to hit it out of the park with the next
record. Bruce Springsteen.
It's on a rocket ship. We don't want to miss that window.
The label, once you have your first top 10, they're just thinking about momentum.
I'm trying to find something real. These new songs, they're different, but they're the only thing making sense to me right now. The only thing I can still believe in.
Then we'll get it. Whatever it takes.
Well, they blew up the chicken man in Philly last night. Now they blew up his house too.
This is a highly unorthodox career move.
But that's the point. He's channeling something deeply personal. But in this office, my office, we believe in Bruce Springsteen. Everything dies,
but if that's so bad. All right, Corey, you posed the question, am I a Springsteen fan? I'll say yes, I am a Springsteen fan, but I feel also, because I have so many friends who are from the States and some friends, particularly from the East Coast, and some friends from that part of the world, that I couldn't call myself a Springsteen fan because it's right. Like...
is like a national treasure here.
Is a national treasure.
Yeah.
There's something about it that just doesn't translate. Like, not that it doesn't translate, because his music is amazing. He's an amazing songwriter. He's, you know, like his endurance as an artist and also an important artist at different eras is like unfathomable. But also there's something so hyper-specific about his so his Americanness that like we – I'm trying to think. I don't know if there's like, I mean, this is kind of a dumb comp and you might not even know who this man is, but like John Farnham is an Australian singer who is like one of the most famous Australian singers and one of the great characters and has been around since the 1970s. I would not expect you to have even heard his name ever. And if you have heard his name, you've maybe heard it in relation to one song. And so I feel like I might know Springsteen, but I don't know him like someone who's known him their whole life. So this movie for me going into it was not nearly as hallowed a turf as perhaps some other people. And basically the story centers on Bruce creating his 82 album, Nebraska, born in the USA with the E Street Band, based on Warren Zanes' book, is what this is. And Scott Cooper is a director, like probably the biggest movie ever made was like Crazy Heart, which was...
Right. Won Jeff Bridges' Oscar.
Yeah, won Jeff Bridges. Yeah. Black Mass, which canceled all movies being made in Boston for 10 years. basically, he actually did... He's as a filmmaker, he's always collecting like great actors and they love working with him.
He works with great actors. He gets good performances. His movies look pretty good. And on paper, I mean, I remember seeing the Black Mass trailer. I actually forgot he had done that and I did see it when it came out. It's a thing where you're more excited and then you see the finished product and it just doesn't quite connect. And so I really don't have a grudge or something against him as a filmmaker, other than if you're going to say, well, you took this thing that had all this potential and it didn't live up to its potential, because I do think it's the kind of, I don't know if you'd call him a studio filmmaker, but what we used to have in previous decades of the kind of journeyman, you know, the kind of guy who would try different things and do dramas and get performances and make adult movies. And so I hold no ill will towards him, but as you run down the list, it does kind of seem the pattern of like, I didn't like that as much as I wanted to like that. And I do think that holds true with the new one.
Yeah, exactly. That's the same for me, because if you look at his films, like Crazy, he was an actor first. He makes Crazy Heart, which is probably his biggest sort of critical hit, other than maybe Hostiles, which I love. That's one that actually hit for me. That was a great movie. Wes Studi, Christian Bale in that. Out of the Furnace, again, another cast that is...
Saw that when it came out, Zoe Saldana, Christian Bale.
Overstuffed with all these great people delivering absolutely outstanding performances, and that there is just something that is just... that doesn't connect. And I would just say this, like, Jeremy Allen White's Bruce, like, for the most part, his performance, like, I feel like... there's an early part of the movie, without sort of getting into too many spoilers, where it's like Jeremy Allen White as Bruce and Jeremy Strong as John Landau, and particularly Odessa Young, Aussie, who is another, I'm learning, is another made up girlfriend in music biopic movies. Composite doesn't really exist. But Odessa Young, Aussie, great actor. All very early on, they seem to like have so nailed the tone, intonation, bridging past that whole, like, I'm doing an impression to actually getting to the core of a character. And it's early and it feels so good. But the longer the movie endures, like, Jeremy Strong has some really, like, he's like Basil Exposition in the Austin Powers movies. He just has to like tell us what we've just seen for an hour. Jeremy Allen White has to write down words sometimes in his like journal while he's learning about something that you're like, you go, oh my God, this is ridiculous. And it feels like some of the drama is like, there's moments where it's like, it takes the drama away from the movie instead of leaning into the drama. It's, I just don't know why this didn't connect. I wanted it to connect so hard because everything, it's got all the conditions.
I have a little bit of a theory, at least why it didn't work for me. I will say I agree. I don't think the Jeremy Allen White performance is bad, but I do think the movie leaves him out to dry a little bit.
Oh, it does,
like it's kind of like he's doing what he can within this movie, but the movie's not always doing the best for him. And so he's an actor definitely in first couple seasons of The Bear, huge fan of, and really want the best for him and want him to get the opportunities to do stuff. So on paper, this seems to make a lot of sense. It's, you know, similar in one way to the Chalamet Dylan movie, where when I'm looking at him, I can only see the actor. I don't really see Springsteen the same way I didn't really see Dylan, but that can kind of melt away if the movie's working. You know, like I accept the Chalamet Dylan because the movie sets him up for success with the framework of it. And so I'll say that I think this movie does one thing incredibly right and then one thing incredibly wrong, and see how see how they bounce off you. So the thing that I do think it does right, which is similar to what A Complete Unknown did last year, which was rather than try to tackle Cradle to the Grave and condense 50 years of a career, you know, plus some childhood into the movie, it mostly focuses on this one period. Now, granted, are there maybe too many flashbacks to the childhood that then inform the modern day? Yes, but I do think taking the Nebraska, you know, totally agree with you there. But I do think that taking the Nebraska period right before Born in the USA, you know, between Born to Run and The River, obviously, but before Born in the USA would take him to this other level, I do think is a really interesting dramatic period, the same way that the Dylan going electric, there's a lot of dramatic conflict there. So if you zoom into this really specific period, I do think that is an interesting way to say, well, this is just one thousandth of what made this artist great. But if you really get into the details, it can be satisfying on its own. So that's the thing I do think the movie does right. Could we have done with maybe no flashbacks or certainly less flashbacks? Yes, for me. But the Nebraska era, I don't think on paper is a mistake. I think that's a good idea. And the thing that I think that the movie – oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say you and I are in agreement. I don't like Cradle to the Grave biopics kill me. And that's one of my favorite things about Michael Mann's Ali is that he centers it on – getting the world championship and having it taken away. And then time passes where his fame has wilted. It's like, it looks like his career is completely done. And then it's like, he wins his case. And so it's like, it's then the rumble in the jungle as a signal. So it's like winning the title, being the youngest world champion, taken away. And those two kind of bookends, those two very specific time periods, you can infer and intimate all this stuff that's like webbing between them, and the flashbacks in Ali are so seamless. You know, the Sam, you know, in a one Sam Cooke montage, which I might say is the greatest opening of any movie ever. That's, you know, was 8 minutes of Sam Cooke montage at the beginning of Ali. That's a good way to do it. And I saw when same with The Complete Unknown, same with this, like, oh, they're just centering on something. They're not trying to have all the answers. Yep. In fact, probably in A Complete Unknown, they don't want to give you too many of the answers. And with Bruce, the thing had always been that, like, his profound connection with his audience was that he'd bared his soul to us right for this album. So getting a peek at this point is really critical. But yeah, I don't know. It's like it's the most dramatic thing ever. And then you see it and you're like, was it? Like, what was it the best thing in his life?
Yeah. I totally agree with you. I do think there's something that happens when you zoom so far out. I mean, people obviously make the comparison to it's a Wikipedia entry on a movie that tries to cover too much ground. I think the thing that it does is then you have to paint everything in such broad strokes that kind of nothing rings true. And because people's lives really aren't, they don't fall neatly into three act structures, even if you can try to zoom out and make some kind of, well, here was the rise and the fall and then the little rise again. But people's real lives are so much more complicated than that. The one of the best biographies of anyone in film that I've read is the Mark Harris book on Mike Nichols. Have you read that?
Yeah, it's a great book.
I believe it's called Nichols: A Life. And the thing that really, really stuck with me about reading that book, you know, having been a fan of his movies and seen most of it over time and seen even one of his plays towards the end, was basically that it so defied that structure, is that Mike Nichols, a dozen times throughout his life, had the absolute biggest hit on top of the world smash, and then the next movie or play or whatever was beyond the biggest flop. And then he would dig himself out and come back again. And he just did this over and over and over. And it's like he kept finding new peaks. And just when you would think, oh, well, clearly this artist, he's so smart. He's been around, he's learned from his mistakes. He's not going to slip again. And he would slip again. And he would, I mean, not just like a little bit, but like fall on his face. You know what I mean? Like with
catastrophic
career killing flop. And then he would kind of reinvent himself and come back and do something else and move to the stage or move to a, you know, a smaller scale of movie, or he just kept having new lives. And so, you know, in a way, that would be the hardest movie to make. It wouldn't work as a movie dramatically because it would just be too much, you know? So the idea of trying to cover too much ground, I think, is almost always a mistake for movies where you're trying to get the greatest hits of someone's life, because lives really don't, they don't ring true in that way. So that was the thing that I did think the movie did correctly. The thing that I think the movie really stumbles, and here's where the contrast of A Complete Unknown really comes in for me, is that Complete Unknown, I'm a Bob Dylan fan, but I'm, as you with Bruce, by no means like a Dylanologist. Like, it had been a few years since I'd had a Dylan phase.
Yeah.
And so when I went to see the movie, you know, the trailers, the Timmy, the hype, like a bit skeptical,
Monica Barbaro, though, just put me straight over the edge.
Oh,
straight,
I mean,
you know, she's like the best thing in the movie.
Among other things, I'll tell you, I sat down with my, you know, some family members around Christmas time. We saw a matinee, you know, 10 or 11 in the morning or something. And almost every time he started to sing a song as Bob Dylan, and you would see the faces of the people watching him sing it, I would get teary-eyed. And I was so shocked and caught off guard, because, like I said, you know, Bob Dylan's a genius. I respect Bob Dylan, but he's not one of my guys, to use Marin parlance. Is so I was surprised at how well the movie put me in the power of the music. And I think the number one thing that movie did right, which I really admired about it, was I think there's one scene where you see him kind of running into his apartment and jotting down a couple lines of Like a Rolling Stone, but the entire rest of the movie, you don't see him creating, coming up with, having the exact thing happen to them that then he writes the lyric in the next scene. All you see is, here are more or less the finished songs.
Yeah.
And you let the music speak for itself. And the music is so powerful and the performances are so powerful. And you see the way people are reacting to them. You are feeling the music. And so the movie, rather than try and explain, like, well, what was he really? It kind of maintains the mystery of Bob Dylan. It keeps him as a bit of an enigma, as a bit of a closed-off person who was informed by the world around him, but was also kept people at a bit of a distance. And kind of these songs seem to flow out of him more or less fully formed, inspired by this environment, which the movie does go into showing you the place that created him. But it's in some ways the complete opposite of the Springsteen movie, where not only are you getting these flashbacks to the childhood, which you're like, you know, I can't remember who had the Letterboxd review of like, looks at Mansion on Hill, writes song Mansion on Hill, but full credit to that person, is how literal the movie is. And unfortunately, the thing that rings the most false in movies like these is trying to capture that moment of inspiration and the here's the great artist writing that great song. I just think it would have been so much better to almost present these songs fully formed and just show the outside forces kind of crushing in. And I think the internal, you know, Jeremy Allen White performance you could have gotten, I think, could have worked. But I think the more the movie tries to explain, here's where this song's coming from, here's why he's writing it, here's how he's feeling, here's the thing that happened to him that he's putting in the lyric to the song, I think it just rings as phony. And I think you, at least for me personally, like, my bullshit detectors go up and I kind of push away in a way that the Dylan movie really affected me, and this, it just didn't.
Yeah, as a contrast, and it's sort of unfair to contrast them, like, just at face value, but like, musician biopic happens, and I would say I've had a Dylan phase. I'm probably more strong on the universality of Dylan than Springsteen. I've always seen Dylan more as like a poet versus a musician in many ways. And so, like, but that Timmy performance, that movie, which really worked for me, watching it, like, you know, you can see there are definitely cracks. It's not a perfect movie by any stretch of the imagination, but you can't deny its power when you just get consumed by a performance, which that movie has so many consuming performances. I land in, I got a bit teary-eyed with certain mm-hmm. songs. You know, you just do that thing. But in this movie, you're so right. And look, I think we just have to end it with that absolutely legendary and heroic person on Letterboxd. Bless Letterboxd. Bless people. But looks at Mansion on Hill writes a song called Mansion on Hill. There's nothing more that I can say. Look, it's just so perfect. I wish Scott Cooper, because he seems to have this amazing connection with actors, I wish him a more cohesive something. I wish it in his future, but it's just not going to be this. And I feel like there are going to be a lot of people who love Springsteen who I feel like are not going to like it. And I'll shout out to my friend Sean Burns, who went to see a movie with a friend who loved Bruce Springsteen. He texted our group chat and said, "My friend leant over to me at the end of the movie and said, 'I don't know if I like Bruce Springsteen anymore.'"
Oh no. And I do have to give credit. It's the great David Sims from Blank Check, Sims, who had that absolutely perfect.
Of course it was. Review. What a legend. What a legend. Corey, thank you so much for doing this. You're the best. I will link off to all your great cinephile game paraphernalia and books as part of this, but I appreciate you for doing this. And maybe catch you on another One Hot Take, not One Hot Fest, about a movie that you're probably, psychopathically obsessed with and pathologically destined to talk about with me.
Sounds good.